Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schleck. We're part of the Athletic Podcast Network. With me today on this just atrociously icy afternoon in Oklahoma City, it's where I'm from, Michele, in a very different part of the world. Michele, what's up? How's it going?
Well, it's going well, all things considered, and it's rainy. It's really gray here for most of the days. Today, we had a little bit of sun, so I consider myself extremely lucky. And well, we have basketball sort of over the next few hours, so it's it's a good day.
The news dropped just moments before we started this podcast that Anthony Davis is not going to play tonight for the Lakers. Everybody, great,
yeah,
cool,
yeah.
LeBron's questionable. Oh, it's infuriating. The Thunder are getting the kind of luck that we would have just begged for years ago. Instead, they get it this year when the goal is to get a top five pick. What a travesty.
It's because it's not luck. It's being bad. When you're bad, good teams are likely going to rest good players against you.
This is true. This is true.
So, I know, I'm sorry for whoever is on Twitter thinking that OKC is actually good. It's not. and it's better than expected. Yes, still not enough to, when you have the chance to rest Anthony Davis and you think you can get away with a victory, then you do it. And probably LeBron is going to play it. Maybe Anthony Davis will play the next game, so we're going to see him anyway. Yeah. And tonight it will be the Dennis and Trez show. Or the Roby show. Who knows?
So Roby is
still out.
I think he's listed as out still. Yeah. His foot is sore. And he was wearing a boot on the bench the other night.
Yeah.
As only a preventative measure, we were asking, or Degnault, before we even said anything to him pregame the other night, he was like, all right, let's let me go ahead and unload all of this on you. And he told us, like, Isaiah's going to be wearing a boot. He said, it's only preventative. We're not worried about his health. So just so you know, he's going to be wearing a boot. That's going to happen. So it wasn't a mystery to people that were on that call. And so I honestly wouldn't be too concerned about it. They haven't had, the only concerning injury they've had is George Hill. And honestly, that's a helpful thing to this team is to have no George Hill for a minute. So yeah, they play the Lakers without, I mean, they could win this game and it's just, it's bad luck for the Thunder to play a team that should trounce them. And They could rack up another win. I know some people are excited about that. That's fine. When that draft lottery comes around, these wins, this Houston win, the win against Minnesota, while fun in the moment, while this game may be fun in the moment, if you're just rooting for those wins, it just shows a lack of vision for, one, what the Thunder would like to do, and then, two, the future of this team. And I know that having a team lose isn't fun, but ultimately, if you start watching some of these guys in this draft, you have to understand that the more games they win, the further away you get from getting any of these really good players.
Yeah, and to be completely honest with you, I said to John over the last Thunder of the Dark episode that, to me, a game like the one against Minnesota, the second night of the back-to-back, you need to win that game. Because Minnesota is not playing anyone. You have Shea, that is clearly the best player on the court. You have Hami, that was clearly the second best player on the court. Wow, I said that. past Michele, I'm sorry, but this is what we have.
Honestly, let's stop. I'm going to stop you. There's like these weird like apologists on all this stuff. Like, there's no apology to be made. Like, if you want, like, in the moment when we made the analysis on Hami, he wasn't making good passes. He wasn't making good plays. He had tunnel vision and he couldn't shoot the ball at all.
But we had no vision at the rim. We had no vision on the future. That is what we missed.
How could you? What did you see that made you think that this was even possible? And I talked to Mark about it. Like, what? A lot of this is opportunity for him, and it's the fact that he works really hard when you don't see it. Yeah. And past Hami, I mean, last year Hamidou Diallo was just like straight up just adventure and mystery. Right? Yeah. You didn't know what you were going to get from him night in, night out. He comes in. Sometimes he does something great. Sometimes he does things that are spectacularly bad. I mean, that was him last year.
Yeah.
And he has developed into a more steady player. He's gotten more experience. He's gotten more experiences when it comes to being on the court for a good length of time. And he's improved. And good on him and good on the coaching staff. But that doesn't mean that we need to like issue some apology to Hamidou Diallo. Like, the correct call was made then, and we can say, yeah, he has changed.
Yeah.
If I'm making the wrong analysis on a player at a current time, then yeah, I'll apologize for that. But honestly, like, if you would have projected this, you're either just like a crazy homer that think that you have vision, but you don't really have vision. Because you could do this for every player, right? You could extrapolate things to every player, and you're going to be wrong a majority of the time.
Yeah.
But you can look at what you have, see what you have to work with, and say, yes, most NBA players don't get better like that, especially guys that were picked in the second round. It just doesn't typically happen. So I'm issuing no apology, but I will say good on Hami for improving, and I'm impressed with what he's done, and I hope he continues to improve.
Yeah. Yeah. Also because, I mean, he's still very young. Not super duper. I mean, he is still, I think, on his way for his 23rd birthday, something like that.
Yeah, I think he's 22. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's still room between now and his prime. And
yeah,
and if Hami is this kind of player, then maybe he's not really part of the core, but he may be fight for a role in the core. Who knows? Like,
or he just gets a nice second deal.
Yeah, which is
like, I didn't think that he was on his way to getting a nice second deal. He frankly was not on his way to getting a nice second deal until recently, and that could fade too. Like, some of this could fade as well.
Yeah, and maybe it's just that sometimes we were very, very high on Hami in his first stint in the league. Then he had the injury and he lost basically, I would say, a month and a half. Then he came back and the team was kind of in a different mold. They were trying to win at all costs. And then the second year, another injury, something like that. Sometimes you need to rethink what you do and just go back to work and to try to be someone else. And Hami is doing that.
Yeah.
Now, he needs to do that on a consistent basis for way more than 5 to 10 games. But still, what he showed over the last 10 games, I think it's relevant and credit to him and to the coaching staff, because they are clearly working on the right direction, on the same direction, which is often important Sometimes you have ideas for a player and he just diverges from the path. Hami seems on board. And again, if the bad things are 2 mid-range shots per game, I would rather prefer them being 3s. But, you know, you can't have everything all the time. So we just have to be happy with what you have.
Yeah. And one thing that I took from what Degnan was saying about Hami was that he said that he figured out early on how to be a professional. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you can look back at players that didn't work out. Everybody had very high hopes for Terrence Ferguson.
Yeah.
Really, his first 3 years, it was, wow, look at these flashes. What could he be? People predicting that he could score 15 points per game and do all these things. I mean, there was a lot there.
I did that.
Yeah. And I think one of the hurdles that he never got over is that he never truly learned how to be a professional, and that he didn't bring that. And a lot of it is that he has tons of off the court issues, and yes, all that's there.
Yeah.
But even as a professional, tons of these guys have off the court issues. Tons of these guys have stuff going on in their lives that are difficult to overcome. That's all of us, right? Like, we all experience things in life that are difficult to overcome. All of us. But learning how to be professional, and they said that that's something that Hami did early on. And I hadn't heard anybody say that. You could assume some of that kind of stuff, but when you hear a coach that's been with him since the beginning, that he learned how to be professional very early on. It's like, oh, okay. Well, that's like another little bit of interesting information that helps you learn a little bit more about him and why, like, a Terrence Ferguson, Jeremy Lamb, Perry Jones, you know, type of player, Mitch McGarry, that didn't work out for this team. Like, that was a missing puzzle piece for all of those guys. Now, Jeremy Lamb, I think, has figured it out because he's a nice pro now. Perry Jones never did. Perry Jones isn't in the league. Mitch McGarry is a professional bowler now, or maybe even recreational bowler. I don't even know if he's professional. But whatever he is, he did never figure out that piece of the puzzle. And Hamidou Diallo, according to the head coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder, has figured that piece out early on. And that can only be a nice support for you as you move forward and as you progress in your skill level. And, you know, credit to him for becoming what he has. Because, I mean, I would guess that you would have to go all the way back to high school and maybe even pre-high school to find a game where Hamidou Diallo had 10 assists in a game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because, I mean, so.
Not in Kentucky. Didn't happen at Kentucky.
No.
There's no, I don't even have to look at the stats.
No.
To know that that never, ever happened.
Yeah.
And then even going back to high school, like, he's a big dude who probably played against a lot of smaller dudes, and he probably just mashed them and didn't have to get 10 assists a game. I need to ask him, you know, was that your first game ever to get a points assist double-double? Because that is an accomplishment. That's an accomplishment for a guy like that. And it took the circumstances that the Thunder had, which was zero guards on the team, to make it happen. But still, he could have had 7 turnovers and 4 assists in that game. I mean, I would have said that, you know, 2 months ago, I would have said that's a more likely outcome. But he has developed. He's become a better player. He's more controlled, which I think is like the number one thing that has changed with him mentally. It's all mentally. And he's even talked about that. He talked about that, how Shea has helped him with that, how Coach Degnault's helped him with that, that, like, mentally he is slowing down some, because you could even see it in the past and even in moments still that things just seem to be moving so fast, and he's so athletic that instead of keeping up with the game here, he just tries to keep up with the game
physically. With his legs.
And sometimes that works for him well. Like, sometimes he does spectacular things because of that. And now it feels like up here is matching physically what he can do. And that's when you can become like a pretty special type of player. Not that Hamo is going to be like some like all-star or something, but, you know, for the skill level and for what he was when he came in the league, that to me is kind of how this emergence is happening with him.
Yeah. Now that you mentioned him and McGarry, I can think just of two things. One, I'm trying to rewind in my head how many underhand assists Hami makes. So I have the feeling that he's never trying to pass the ball in a conventional way. He's always like bowling the ball. And B, the going from bowling to McGarry, I still have nightmares about one thing that McGarry did on Twitter. And I will probably already told the story. This is where I basically said, okay, Mitch, no. Like everything but this, no. He posted a picture of a filet mignon. And it was so badly overcooked that you could tell from the picture. And I remember poor Darnell Mayberry said, do you like it that way? And he said, of course. And for me, done. Like, if you overcook a filet mignon.
Chance from there.
Like, no chance.
Yeah, why would you do that?
Yeah, that's I don't know. Why?
That's awful. It's like pouring pickle juice on a cake or something. Like, give me a break. You don't do that.
Yeah, or ketchup on a cake.
Ketchup on a cake. Hey, you know. Yeah, it could be your thing.
Yeah.
No judgment. No judgment.
Well, sort of.
Let's go let's go over to the stream. Let's see who's joining us. Christos from Greece, as always, thanks for joining. We have Arnold from the Philippines here. Thanks for joining. Kai from New Zealand. I guess this is the right time to get people worldwide right now, Michele. We have Aiden from Edmond. Thanks for joining. Bryce from Ponca City. Jermaine from Charleston, South Carolina. Holding down the Dort, he says. We have Rahanver from West London in the UK. Kyle from Hawaii. Wow. Dan Mayan from Rhode Island. Wow. The Fluky from Germany, as always. Holy moly, guys. Christian
Kowalik
from South London.
Wow.
Poland. Miroslav from Germany. Falk from Denmark.
This is awesome.
Amazing. Thanks so much. We got T in Miami. Thanks for joining, guys. We really appreciate it. Down to Dunk Worldwide. Here we are. We got Jay Smooth, 27, from Texas. Let's go to the big numbers for the Thunder. They are currently sitting at 28th in offense, 104.9. Not good.
No.
If you're wondering.
No.
If you're wondering if that's good. And if you're sitting here also wondering, how in the world did a team with the 28th ranked offense score 83 points and a half? My goodness. And then that team turned around and scored 13 in the third. What in the world?
Randomness,
that was just a wild game.
Variance.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Timberwolves. The Thunder are 19th in defense, which is improving.
Mm-hmm.
They are 111.5. 111.5, by the way, still not good.
No.
Still not a good defense. And they are 28th in net rating, a negative 6.6 net rating. The only two teams that are worse than them are the Orlando Magic, who are just been decimated by injuries, and you probably guessed it, the Minnesota Timberwolves, who we have seen way too much of in the last week. So, oh shoot. And if you're thinking the Thunder are too good to tank because they barely beat the Timberwolves, get a grip, everybody. Get a grip. Take a look at these big numbers and get a grip. All right. Michele, anything?
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Not a question, a quiz for you on ratings, offense, defense. Can you guess who? Well, three questions. Can you guess who has the best on-off rating of the team? If you exclude garbage time, which means according to Clean the Glass.
Oh, for the Thunder, who has the best on-off rating?
Yeah.
Dort.
Nope. Number three on the list.
Muscala?
Nope. Number six on the list.
Okay. This quiz makes me believe it's not Shea.
Wah,
Teo?
Wah. Nope. Come on.
It's not Horford.
It's John's guy.
John's guy?
Yeah.
Who's John's guy?
Kenrich Williams.
Oh, Kenny.
Kenny.
Oh, man. Not surprising. I'm a huge Kenrich Williams guy. There are very few guys on this team that I would say I would like for them to stick around as a role player moving forward. He's one.
Yeah.
Maybe one of one. Right?
Yeah. So the first question went horribly bad. So you can now, trying to redeem yourself by guessing who has the best defensive net rating on a team.
Dort.
Come on, Andrew. It's not Dort. Dort is quite bad.
In defense?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Always on-off, in terms of on-off. Who gives the best swing to the team? Which always also is who has the best defensive rating.
Michele, I just don't know.
It's easy. It's easy. Super easy.
It's apparently not.
No, it's easy. It's also Kenrich Williams, who has by far the best net rating, -15.3 compared to where the Thunder are without him. With him on the court, the Thunder have, I don't have the number here, but it's -15.3 compared to when he's on the court, which is a huge swing.
That is a big swing.
Yeah, as huge as this guy, who among the players who played like relevant minutes, is the guy who has the best swing on offense. That guy is quite easy.
Shea?
Yeah, Shea and Dort are the best at +12 and +13. Yeah. So, I was surprised though. Shea has a negative on-off. And it's that mainly because of the defense. When he's in the court, the defense is awfully bad. And when he plays with either Bazley or Roby, the net rating of the team is quite bad. Which is something that you can attribute to two things, basically. One, Shea plays always against starters. And mostly with starters when the starting unit for OKC is not fully back. Which is where OKC has his own terrible moments against good teams. And also by the fact that whenever you have Roby on the court, the defense suffers. And Bazley has not been great, except for a few games. But still, it's weird that he doesn't have a positive impact overall.
It is strange.
Yeah.
But, I mean, on a team that has the net rating that they do, it's not surprising.
No. And so I wanted to check that against what Alex mentioned on last Wednesday, and I said, well, Shea must be the worst of that pack. Not the case. Mm-hmm. Almost every young player on that table that Alex showed, meaning Ja Morant, Devin Booker, or Donovan Mitchell, they all have a bad on-off, which is kind of surprising to me.
It is surprising.
Yeah. This is according to Clean the Glass. I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah, I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah, me neither.
I don't have any clue what to do with
that. Yeah, me neither. But it's something where probably for Mitchell is the second unit of the Jazz is so good. And it's not that the on-off swing means that when Donovan is on the court, the Jazz are bad. It means that the second unit of the Jazz is basically dismantling everyone, which can happen, which is basically what Schroeder's on-off was saying last year. The Thunder second unit was so good. But still, it's a bit, unsettling to me that Shea has one of the worst defensive rating of the team.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's got a lot of responsibility as an offensive player.
Yeah.
And this happens with guys that do have that kind of responsibility as an offensive player. I don't think he's been a bad defender this year, though.
No, not a great one. I wonder how, sometimes we don't pay too much attention on how many times he really allows his man to either force the switch or just take the dribble penetration a little bit easier than what it could have been. Those things are hard to check and to parse. And this is why having good defensive metrics is so hard. It's because it's
very hard.
It's difficult to, for example, there is, I probably already mentioned this a million times, but it's worth remembering. And it, allows me to remind everyone to read Seth Partnow because he's one of the greatest analytical minds in the NBA. And he mentioned on Twitter once that one of the stats that he wants to track one day is the number of shots that a defender takes away. And this is so hard. Because it's
so you have to look at every single thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to look at every single thing.
Exactly. And yeah, but this is crucial. And it's also the opposite. Like what happens when you allow shots that you could have prevent. And these are things that you have probably a hard time putting into stats, but maybe they reflect into broader numbers, which
Well, it's why you can't just look at the defensive numbers and determine who's a good defender and who's not. I mean that's why you watch the game. And you know, Shea has all the tools to be a good defender. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen him like truly put it together for the Thunder yet. Mm-hmm. Even especially last year in the playoffs against Houston. I mean, they were targeting him on the defensive end. And so, you know, there's still a lot of growth and improvement to be done there, but you know, I haven't seen it yet. We got Jay Smith in the chat. What's up, Jay? He said, I just wanted to get your opinions on how the Rose trade will impact Obi Toppin's development. Always about Obi. I'll tell you this, Jay. Obi Toppin is not the guy I thought he was going to be, and I would blame Tibbs.
Yeah.
This is all Tibbs, because they're not... He hasn't been as good as they would have hoped, but they're certainly... there's certainly some blame on Tibbs when it comes to development, because all they want to do is just try to win games, and development doesn't seem to be a huge part of that.
Yeah, and I can't pretend to say that I watched a ton of Knicks games, because I didn't. But I didn't expect that from Toppin. I expected him to be a guy who could stay on the court a lot, especially for a team that values... talent, but not young, super young talent. Like if you put a guy that's 18, like Pokuševski, he doesn't sniff the court for the Knicks. I probably thought, well, maybe Toppin is an old guy compared to the other rookies. He was a leader, and I thought the Tibbs could value those things. But probably the fact that he's not there defensively, and that maybe his shot is not where they thought it could be. Maybe this is why. Mm-hmm. I don't think that Rose impact... I know that Jay doesn't... wasn't implying that, but I don't think that that Rose impacts anything in terms of Toppin. Maybe having a guy that can actually play the point on the second unit, maybe it will help him a bit. I don't know.
It's possible. Let's see. James Anderson made a good observation. He said that I understand the advanced stats showing that we should and will get worse, but 10 and 12 is really all that matters. I agree. It matters significantly.
Yeah.
With regards to getting a good pick in the lottery, it definitely matters. I agree. That's what makes like Anthony Davis missing tonight's game like very like frustrating, because it will impact. It will actually impact the future of the Thunder. Like these, even though like you only see what's right in front of your face right now, that will impact it. If you don't have a vision for what this team could be in the future and what they could do, if they could add one or two really nice prospects, great. If that's your goal, if you just want to win the game that's right in front of you, you're gonna miss out. And it's the front office's job to do that. To get them to a place where they will lose more games. And if you're Sam, you've done a ton to this point.
Yeah.
To get yourself to the place that you're in. The amount of trades that they made that should have made them worse is tremendous. And this team, they're not trying to be good. They weren't trying to win 10 games by this point. I think they would have hoped that they wouldn't have won this many. And one, credit to these Thunder players that are all on board, and definitely credit to the staff who have done a tremendous job. They've done a great job. And Sam has got more work to do, in my opinion, if they want to get to the place where they want to be. And I think that it's very clear and apparent exactly where they want to be.
Yeah. If I can mention something very quick, is that...
Sure.
Over the next 16 games, the easiest opponent for OKC opponents will be Cleveland, Dallas, and Atlanta. Which...
Yeah.
Like, they can go 2-14 or 4-12 with ease. And yeah. I know that having 14-22 is not like probably giving you the worst record in the league, but it's also true that except for a few teams that are way below OKC, which are mm-hmm. basically three teams, mm-hmm. the others...
It probably puts you in the bottom five. It probably exactly. puts you in the exactly. bottom Where? Five. And if you can get to the bottom five, I think that you can be happy because I think Cade will be the best player out of all those guys. But then after Cade, I can't tell you definitively who will be what from there.
Yeah.
And the G League Ignite games are going to be pivotal in all of this.
Yeah.
Because Jalen Green may come out, or Kuminga may come out and be like some just monster.
Yeah.
And like, oh, okay, well, he's number two, yeah. you know? And I got the feeling like the Evan Mobley stock had risen really high, and now I get the feeling that it's kind of leveling out some.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not impossible that Evan Mobley even falls to five
yeah.
in this draft. So to me, it's those five. You just want to get one of them,
yeah.
right? Like if you get Suggs, great, Mobley, Kuminga, Green. Unless you're getting the number one pick, I don't think you're getting Cade. But if you can get one of those other four, like you just want to get one of those other four.
Yeah,
like that's what you want, and you want to just get into that bottom five to give yourself the best chance.
Yeah, and again, I know that this year draft is something extremely important, but with all the assets that you have. It's not. We already talked last week about the possibility of trading Shea and something like that. But I do think that if you are, if you don't have the number one pick, like if you take that out of the equation and you have a top five pick, if you package enough, you can move like one or two spots. Maybe you don't get one, but say that you like Kuminga more than Green and you are confident that. He's the guy, then you probably can get him if you have a high pick.
Yeah.
So either you have a lot of luck and you need to have that anyway, even if you have the worst record in the league in order to get number one pick, which is, again, if you somehow struck luck over the last few games of the season and somehow you get the fourth worst record, then you are there in terms of percentage. It's not that different. So...
Yep.
Either you're lucky and you get number one, or OKC have all the tools to secure the number two or the number three pick with what they have.
Yeah, they've got. Yeah, I mean that's why you bake all the deals that you do, so that you just give yourself all the chances to get there.
Yeah, they can, like, if they like Kuminga as much as Dallas loved Luka, which is like he's not that kind of player, I know, but just to make an example, then you can package. Mm-hmm. Five first round pick. Who cares? If this is your guy and you're confident that that is your guy, then you just get him. And yeah, probably it will cost you a little bit more than the other teams because everyone knows how many picks you have. But in the end, I mean, it's not that you have them for other purposes. You can trade them. And and yeah, and again.
Yeah, you can.
You can also trade Shea, Dort, Bazley, whoever. Like,
yeah.
You have so many options.
Mike
Muscala.
Who is out due to concussion protocol, which, you know, it's easy to make fun of Mike Muscala. I don't think you should. I think Mike Muscala has been awesome this year.
Yeah.
I think he's been extremely helpful to all the young guys because on offense, he knows where to be on every possession to help.
Yeah.
And he sets good screens. He's hitting his outside shot. He's a great release valve for any of these guys. And he's been that all year. And so get well soon, Mike Muscala. I think that he is a huge help to this team. So yeah, Lakers. They play the Lakers tonight in LA. They get the Lakers again in LA on Wednesday. Good on the Thunder for getting out of OKC just in time. Because man, and they're, I guess they'll come back and play at home on Sunday, to which I think the high on Sunday is 18 in OKC.
Wow.
So they'll be welcome back into frigid temperatures. Somehow we've become a weather show just because it's a part of my concerns here at my place. But let's take a look at some Twitter questions. I am so the Oklahoma City Blue are doing a media availability here shortly, and I'm kind of monitoring that because they said that I got a call earlier that Poku might be available, and so I'd like to hear what he has to say.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
But let's do some Twitter questions, and let's see.
I have them here. We can start with SportFan405. Hill Muscala Diallo, Williams, Ariza. How many get traded and how soon?
I think it's still George Hill.
Yeah.
I know his injury complicates things. It's not a devastating injury. It's not like a knee injury where you're going to be like, is he going to be the same when he comes back? Like he will be fine. A team can trade for him immediately, right?
Yeah.
And not worry and just know that, like, yeah, he just has to heal. And after he heals, he'll be back and he'll be doing the same George Hill stuff. So I don't think that it's like a, hey, we need to wait and see what this guy can do kind of thing. I think that he's a well-known commodity. And then from there, I have to believe the Thunder are going to try to trade Trevor Ariza.
Yeah.
And they may be a deadline type of deal. It took Memphis all the way until the deadline to trade Andre Iguodala.
Yeah, and Ariza is nowhere near that value. So expect him to be traded for nothing. Maybe even cash.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
so,
hold on. Sorry.
So I don't expect him to be really traded. Maybe OKC can absorb something bad. Or an unwanted contract or whatever. Maybe this is how you get some assets. But it's not that we have too many bad contracts in the league that you can move with ease. Like, Russ would be one, but I'm not sure that we should touch that as of today.
Not now. No.
I'm so sad.
I don't know. That is very sad.
But I also don't want him back, Big Virgil, in the chat. I'm not sure I want Russ back.
Not now. Nope. That's too sad.
In 8 years, yes, maybe. Sad.
Yeah, I mean, if he wants to come back and give us an Iverson moment where he kisses the Doritos logo at center court, fine. You know, it's great. Can do that. But yeah, I think probably Hill, Ariza. I mean, Muscala, I don't think that they would shy away from trading him if they get an asset and they send him to a good situation. I mean, going back to Philly,
yeah,
would not be a bad situation for him.
Yeah,
he's got experience with the franchise. They need more shooting,
mm-hmm.
And I think that Mike is in a place where he can really contribute. So that's to me, that's a good situation for him. Hami, I don't think that you can get enough for Hami to make it worth it to trade him. And I think the Thunder will like having him around, not just as a guy that's developing, but from a personality standpoint,
yeah.
I think that he's good.
Look at you,
this group. So
now a second rounder is not enough. I'm glad.
No, I mean, again, I will change my analysis when I see something different.
Yeah, so it's smart.
I can't preemptively change my analysis just because people are emotionally attached to somebody. Like, give me a break. Okay, next one. If you were Danny Ainge, would you rather have at Al Horford and Ariza packaged through trade? Who cares about Ariza?
Yeah,
honestly?
Yeah. Why Ariza? Why do you want to ruin everything with Ariza?
Yeah. I wouldn't do that. Al Horford makes a lot of sense. Yeah. For them, I think George Hill makes some sense for them. Horford into that TPE, I think, might be one of the best guys that they can get at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think it would cost a whole lot to get him.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah,
I would say to me, I would. That's if I'm Danny Ainge, I look at reuniting Horford with his young fellas there.
Yeah, and I know that Tice has been okay, and he's the starters for them. But like, to be honest,
yeah, at this point, he's like way overrated though. Like, he's like a serviceable player.
Yeah,
but the Boston fan base has gone way overboard with what Tice is. Like, he's a really really nice backup.
Yeah.
And if you have Horford and Tice, like, there you go. Like, that's a nice big man rotation.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to win right now, like, I'm sorry, you just don't really have time for the Time Lord. So just, I wouldn't mess with all that. I'd bring Horford in. I think that puts them up into a category in the East where you're like, okay, well, we might have to actually pay attention to this Boston Celtics team now, because with the development of Jaylen Brown, who's been incredible this year, and Marcus Smart coming back potentially, and then you have Jason Tatum, obviously, who's a star. Kemba, who's, if Kemba and Horford can kind of come together and be this, like, the old guard for that team and just make shots and direct the defense, I mean, great. Then you just let your young guys shine.
Yeah, and to be completely honest, the TPE is not going anywhere. This is some deal that you can maybe review at the draft. And say, well,
we still
have it.
True.
Now, if Tristan Thompson picks up his TP is options, then you can trade him. You don't pay a huge luxury tax for that, because you probably have just half of those $27 million if you allow Tristan Thompson either to expire or to be packaged. Because I think that he has something, he can say no to a trade to OKC, because he has this weird contract that if you sign for 1 year, then you basically have a de facto no trade clause. And yeah, this can make things a little bit hard in terms of trade. What you can do, another option for Boston is to get an insurance. Like, I know the George Hill injury is not, with his injury, is not an insurance, but I do think that if Kemba goes down, then you have no options, basically. You're just going to lose.
Tremont Waters.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that.
Yeah. So, in some sense, you can also say, well, Teague is nice. It was a nice adventure, but no, we just want to have an extra guard, and we can get him for basically nothing. You can get him for Romeo Langford probably, or for guys like that. So,
yeah. Well, I think that makes a ton.
I know
sense.
That they have Pritchard and guys like that, but who knows?
Yeah, you don't want to get to playoff time and
having to play
heavily
Pritchard.
Rely on Peyton Pritchard.
Yeah.
Like, maybe he plays 10 minutes off the bench, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Because he will go all out in those minutes. And
he was good last night, though.
He might help you. He's pretty good.
Yeah.
He's pretty good. Playoffs are a different animal, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I agree.
You don't want to go into the playoffs relying on a rookie. Rarely has that ever worked out.
Yeah.
I mean, Domantas Sabonis in the playoffs for the Thunder in his rookie season was atrocious.
Yeah.
Like, unplayable.
Yeah.
So, like, just, we have to slow our roll with most rookies. I mean, the only rookie at this point that I look at and say, okay, I feel pretty good about them contributing to a playoff team is Tyrese Halliburton, and he may not even have the opportunity to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And even Tyrese in crunch time yesterday was not touching anything. It was just,
I mean, it's Darren Fox.
Yeah, so
yeah, I just trust him to be out on the court.
Yeah, for sure. He's
and
so
not
smart.
Kill you kind of thing. Oh, he's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, he coaxed Hassan Whiteside from having a temper tantrum yesterday. So, like, that's okay. Great. You're worth the money just for that move right there. This is from at Nate's and five, or Nate Sand five. I don't know which. Let me know, Nate. We've gotten variations of this question. I think I'll answer this question the same almost every time he asks, would you rather have the number two pick in the draft or the number five and the number eight pick in this year's draft? Give me the number two pick in the draft. End of story.
Yeah. 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 It's...
Let me... And I know I said you just want one of those five, but let me choose which one. let the Thunder choose which of those guys outside of Cade is the better guy. Like, let them choose instead of letting the one that the other people don't want fall to you. You always want the choice. And if the higher pick, when you're talking about a top five pick, the higher the pick, the better. The number eight pick over the course of NBA history is not rendered the kind of talent the number two pick has. So yeah. Give me number two.
On Tyrese, because Jay is smooth, 27 is trying to argue with me. No, it kind of took over, but it was before the closing minutes. There was just...
Yeah.
He was great in the fourth quarter, but then I think that as soon as Fox came back, the pecking order was clear, and it was just back to, I'm a complementary piece to his team, which is which is good.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, and it was awesome before. I love Tyrese, so...
Yeah. I hope they make the playoffs. I hope
me too.
I think that
me
would,
too.
That would be wonderful for them.
Then they can get a good coach.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Yeah. The Luke Walton situation is interesting. Okay, last one. This is from at Moriat Logan, and he wants to know... Oh, my two-year-old is invading the room. He's got pieces of wood. You're making a sled. Wow, go show it to your mother, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Kids.
Anyways, sorry.
Very good.
Okay, what if Presti continues to make changes to his typical prospects that we usually joke about? Can't shoot non-3 and D guys. And then he asks about drafting Corey Kispert, a proven sniper who can open up our offense with more movement. So we have the exact right person on the pod, the Corey Kispert. If you don't know who he is, he's a wing from Gonzaga. He's a four-year guy. He's been incredible this year. He's 19.9 points per game, shooting 57% from the field, 48% from three on over six attempts per game, and almost 90% from the free throw line. He's 89.5% from the free throw line. So he's 57, 48, 89 on the season. Just a guy that shoots the basketball. But he is a four-year guy, which doesn't typically fit the model for what Sam Presti is looking for. But tell us a little bit about Corey.
Well, recently, I didn't watch a ton of him, but I have a good grasp because I watched a ton of Gonzaga basketball over the past few years. And I think that at first, when he was a rookie, you had your schemes in mind. Yeah, good shooter, never going to play in the NBA because it's athletically, he's probably not going to be enough. And yet, Corey was a okay athlete, and he improved in his college tenure. And and one thing that struck me, he's a guy that is not just a shooter. He's a guy that can put the ball in on the floor. He can make a pass. And more so, he never makes a mistake in terms of choices on offense. He knows where to be. He knows how to shoot the basketball standstill on the move. He can take a step back. He can pull up from basically anywhere. The range will be some sort of... there will be a period where he adjusts to the NBA range, but I wouldn't worry. He's a guy that could average, as Sam said, Sam Vecenie said in one of the last podcasts, 60, 50, 90. He can end the season like that. He's probably shooting over 75% effective field goal. He's just insane. He's probably, he's not Doug McDermott, but it's that kind of player, more athletical.
Well, he's 6'7", too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's got good size. Yeah. Yeah, he's 69.8 effective field goal percentage, which in my book, that is the perfect field goal percentage.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
Yeah, but he's playing for the number one team in the country, which
right.
is the thing where we should discuss a bit. Because Gonzaga has a way to maximize players. Wilcher, a few seasons ago, he was a player that was scoring in the 20s, just an insane three-point shooter, 45%. He played, I think, a preseason in the NBA, and that was it. This is not Kispert. But what I'm trying to say is, for a Sabonis, there is an Olynyk. And it's not that Olynyk sure. is a bad player, but, you know, Gonzaga really maximizes whoever on his roster. And Mark mm-hmm. Few is a genius, and they play a very sophisticated offense, and they play just such a good offense that basically no defense can stay with them. And on top of that, the WCC is probably the worst conference in college basketball. Yeah. It's not the worst, but Gonzaga is so much better than anyone else that basically you can take all the conference play and put it away because it doesn't mean anything. But Kispert was awesome also against non-conference teams. So you need to take every number from Gonzaga with a grain of salt. But nevertheless, I think that Corey Kispert's numbers are insane. And he could be someone that if you have a pick from Miami that is around the 10th, then yeah. why not? I mean, if you think about how many good looks OKC is creating right now for
right
average
now with
shooters.
This team.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Shea is able to generate good shots. Now, think of mm-hmm. another blue chip prospect that will probably take a good number of shots. You need guys like Kispert. And he yeah. could be awesome with Theo Maledon as your yeah. second unit duo, where Theo is really good at running at the point. He is quiet. He doesn't take too many shots, but he knows how to feed three-point shooters. So I think that Kispert is a very good prospect in general. And it's not that if you are a fourth-year player, it means that you are done. And if he is done with the development, like, he's an awesome scorer. And
he's got the size yeah. and he's got the shooting ability to at least just be a role player, like your ninth guy yeah. at the very, very least. Right?
Yeah, of course, defense will be something that separates his career from a very, very good one to an average one. Like mm-hmm. even Doug McDermott could shoot like everywhere from everywhere. I remember a horse mm-hmm. game between him and Abrines, and he was just killing Abrines, but he could not be a positive defender at any point in his career. And this relegates mm-hmm. you to 8th, 9th, 10th man. I don't doubt that bearing injury, Kispert will be a long-term veteran in the league. But like a starter or a guy off the bench, it's probably going to be defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Kelly, thanks for joining the show. Make sure you go to theathletic.com/downtodunk to get The Athletic for $3.99 a month. It's basically stealing because you get so much great content. You get this podcast ad-free. You get every podcast ad-free. That's The Athletic NBA show. That's The Daily Ding. That's even the team-specific shows other than Down to Dunk. There's a Sixers Beat show that's very good. The Brooklyn Nets show, The Glue Guys is very good. All ad-free. And then plus you get the great written content about not only the NBA, but every major sport. So please go check that out. You guys have a wonderful day, and we will talk to you guys again on Wednesday.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. $5. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.